So I see a lot of people that have been chronically dieting. And what I mean by that is so low, low, low calories. And then they're having high activity and this, they're like, I'm in this huge deficit. And I'm like, but this huge deficit is also creating a big inflammation factor in your body. And when we're, our bodies are inflamed, we're not going to lose weight.
You're listening to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, and this is Trail Talk, where we have casual conversations with all kinds of runners. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultra runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation will go. So if you're ready, let's get started. Hey, welcome to the show. This is the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. My guest today is Dana Eshelman. She is a registered dietitian nutritionist. I think that's RDN. She has RDN after her name. So, welcome to the show, Dana.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Now, I got acquainted with you on Instagram. You were someone that I follow on Instagram, talked about what you had done to help them. So I reached out to you. And I thought, a lot of times I've had people who listen to the show have asked questions about diet, especially as ultramarathon runners, what we eat. We know that we should be eating, like fueling our bodies well, mm-hmm. but I think so few of us really do it well. So I thought you would have some expertise that might help us. So, and one of the things I didn't do before I ask, I saw some of your pictures on Instagram. I know you're active and you help athletes with their nutrition. Mm-hmm. So what is your experience as an athlete?
Yeah. So I mean, I grew up running, so I've been running forever. Recently, I guess over the past 4 years, have really dove headfirst into triathlons. And so that's kind of my thing now. And I've been, yeah, like I said, I've been doing this for 4 years. Usually the half Ironman distance, my goal for 2022 is a full Ironman. So, yeah.
I've talked to, had someone on the show who was she works for the Ironman Corporation. She's somewhere in the administration, mm-hmm. and she's also working on doing Ironman. She's a runner primarily, mm-hmm. but she's been doing some of the other disciplines as well. So
yeah,
that's really cool. So what led you to like say, I think I'm going to start training for Ironman? I mean,
that's a big leap. Just being a runner, like my off days, I would be swimming or biking, like as cross training. And so I was just like, you know, I'm already doing it, right? I'm already here. So might as well kind of like actually train for these disciplines and, you know, put in the work and just see what happens. You know, it's fun. And the triathlon and the running community equally are like just so supportive and very fun. So that helps a ton.
Yeah. So what you say you've completed some Ironman, what ones have you done?
I've only done one half Ironman. Okay. I did Waco, in Texas. Okay. And then I am actually doing Arizona in October here. So yeah.
Well, cool. Mm-hmm. Where is the one in Arizona?
Tempe, Arizona.
Tempe, Arizona. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's cool. Good. I've been to Tempe a while back, and I'm scheduled to be there in October as well.
Oh, cool. Awesome.
I'm doing the Jackass version of the Javelina 100.
Okay.
So it's just one loop of that, but looking forward to that, because that's a big party down there. So that time of year is a great time to be in Arizona.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely not right now when it's, you know, 100 plus degrees, but cool. Yeah.
So was your athletic, was that what brought you into being a nutritionist? How did you decide to do that?
So I, you know, just growing up active, I was a very, I had trouble keeping weight on, and then sort of had, unfortunately, some disordered eating that naturally came with running and just having that mindset of like, I need to be in this body. And so that led me to seeing a dietitian myself, and seeing her really just like brought light to like the importance of nutrition, and that one, that it can be healing, but two, that it can, I mean, significantly improve performance and really make you feel good. So that was what led me here. So I've, you know, beyond schooling, I actually started studying truly into nutrition probably my sophomore year in high school, actually. And I really, really dove into it. So
I know that a lot of people have body type issues. Is that something that you find with the people you work with? Is that a big component of what they struggle with? Because I know especially people who think I can't run because I don't have a runner's body.
Yes.
but you were already doing that, and you still said you needed to have less, you know, you needed to be thinner or cut your food intake.
Yeah.
So because I've never had that. I mean, I wasn't really athletic, and but I know that a lot of people have those. So what's kind of the background behind that that mindset, that feeling like I'm not happy with the way my body looks?
Yeah, so I think a lot of it stems from watching more of like the professional athletes and the really, really good ones being, you know, on the thinner side. You know, and having that elite vision of, if I want to get there, I have to look this way. And so part of it, I think, comes from that. And then, you know, secondary is just, there's obviously some science behind, if you're lighter, you're faster. Mm-hmm. You know, but, and I recognize, and I coach my athletes on this as well, is, you can't, there's a fine line of that thinness scale of dropping too low where you now have lost power and the endurance and stamina that you've worked so hard for. And so that's kind of where it stems from, I think. And then I always, like I said, I tell my athletes, like, a runner's body is a runner's body. Like, in any shape or form, if you are out there running, then you have a runner's body, right? You know, there's no definition of it. And so today I think it's a lot more widely accepted. Runners and any endurance athlete can be any shape and size. It's that we're out there doing it and you know, performing. And so with my athletes, I look at performance scales, if they're progressing in performance, if they start to drop in performance, and I'm like, we're starting to see you drop muscle mass, not you're losing healthy weight, and we need to keep that on. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I think that answered your question.
Yeah. Okay. and so, you know, for a lot of then some of your coaching is and on the emotional side too of the.
Oh yeah.
So what are the emotions that people deal with around eating? I mean, because I'd imagine you know, I know some people go through the, you know, eating a lot, then feeling ashamed, you know, because you know, I didn't stick to my diet, and besides the physical, I mean. Like when I eat sugar, it's like, I know. And then, you know, an hour later, I mean, I had some Oreos. I was in a 50K, and I don't normally eat, you know, and I just chowed down on Oreos. And 5 minutes later, I was like, that was a bad decision. Cause it just, I felt drained of energy. So, you know, sure. But it was, for me, it was an emotional thing. It wasn't like, so what is, you know, how do you help your athletes manage that kind of emotional side?
Yeah. And so with the disordered eating, there tends to be a lot of food rules of what are those good foods you can eat and what are those bad foods that you can't touch. And so people tend to compartmentalize these bad foods into, you know, say this square that they can't touch. And so I really push them to challenge those food rules. And what I mean by that is, you know, allowing flexibility in their nutrition to have those foods once in a while, to incorporate those foods regularly into their nutrition, because what that does is shows them that, hey, I can have these and still feel good, still perform well, all of those things. Because really what happens when we restrict foods is it's like a restrict binge cycle. And so you restrict these Oreos, say, and you say, I can't eat these, I can't eat these, I can't eat these. Then when you tell the brain you can't, it wants it more, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And when you have them, instead of having a couple, you maybe have the whole package, right?
Yeah.
And it's a factor of like a lack of control, because your body is like, oh my gosh, I want all of these. And that's when we start to see the guilt, the shame. Some people deal with depression around the issue. And then it's kind of like that feudal cycle. So then they restrict that food again, and then it's off limits. And then it leads to that binge, and then the guilt, the shame, the depression. And so by challenging those food rules, it really allows the individual to just have that flexibility and understand that there's a way to have an all foods fits approach. And that's really how I coach, is you can have all of your favorite foods in your nutrition plan at any time. And in the beginning, will you want those foods that you've been restricting more? Probably, you know, may you experience weight gain? You might, but it plateaus, right? You're not going to want Oreos all day, every day for the rest of your life.
Right.
There's going to be a time and place where your body's like, I need actual nutrition. Like, I want some good protein. I want some veggies and fruit. So that's kind of the way I coach, is really, you know, allowing them to see that they can challenge those food rules and have that flexibility, while still having their performance and still, you know, maintaining a healthy weight and all of that.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, when athletes come to you, do they come kind of at the beginning of their training, or when does someone seek you out and say, hey, I need help?
Yeah, I see people on such a wide spectrum, I would say. And I think truthfully, it depends on their goals. I always say, you know, if somebody's wanting to change their body composition, meaning if they're wanting to maybe tone up and lose some body fat and put on some muscle, I recommend doing that in off season, because big changes in body composition is where we may see performance decline. So getting to that optimal body composition in off season is best, and then maintaining that through season with appropriate nutrition is, you know, that would be picture perfect.
Mm-hmm. Right?
But sometimes I'll see athletes, you know, when they're like, oh shoot, I need a fueling plan for my race. And they're like 2 weeks out from the race, and I'm like, oh, I wish I would have been seeing you for a long time so we could have, you know, fine tune and figure things out. But I absolutely will work with athletes in that instance and being like, okay, what are you doing now?
Mm-hmm.
What have you seen that's working? Is there things that are causing, you know, GI upset? How are you feeling after your long training days? And so we start to fine tune based on, you know, symptoms and what they've tried and what's worked well and not.
Yeah, I mean, typically, I'm in the ultra marathon running community, and so people will say, well, you know, what food should I take in my ultra marathon? And it's like there's this special stuff that we need to eat,
yep.
And it's your body is used to what you've been eating.
Yeah, 100%.
And so, but yeah, I know stomach issues, GI issues that's a big deal. I mean, mm-hmm. people that I know, I mean, besides even professional runners, or elite athletes, a lot of times what will derail their race is problems with what they eat.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I've been there, you know, I've definitely experienced that. It's just you and I've seen athletes experience that. It's like, I mean, once the GI issues start, unfortunately, the jostling around, especially with like the ultra runs, the jostling around doesn't help it any, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it just exacerbates the complications.
Yeah. And from ultra marathons, I mean, you're jostling the whole entire time. Whereas in a triathlon with swimming, there's still motion, but it's different. And then bicycling is probably less impact on as far as actually moving things around in your stomach. So your marathon is at the end. And so, so you've had a chance to kind of get your body adapted to it.
Yeah, exactly. But, and that's kind of a benefit of triathlon is, you know, you can actually eat solid food on the bike, or most people can. I do have a couple athletes that they just cannot tolerate solid food at all. But, you know, most athletes I see can tolerate solid food on the bike, whereas some of my ultra runners, we've experimented with solid food, but it's been more, I would say, simple carbohydrate solid foods.
Okay.
Than anything. So.
Yeah. Well, and you know, in ultramarathons, I mean, they have bacon. They have, I mean, yeah. there's all kinds of different foods. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. And so how do, I mean, for some athletes, they don't know. I mean, they would go, if they're going into their first ultramarathon, you know, a 50K is not that much more than a marathon, but, you know, getting up into the 50 and 100 mile range, you know, what you do in training might not necessarily work in your race. So how do you help people prepare for that?
So I always, and usually like the race they're signed up for will say, hey, we're sponsored by this organization. This is what we're going to have on the course. So I'm like, you've got to try it. We need to incorporate this into your training plan, because if you run out of fuel or if you're feeling like you need more, you've got to be able to accept what's on the course. That's how you make it through the race, right?
Right. Yeah.
So I always encourage that, you know, for example, triathlon or Ironman is really supported by Gatorade. And so I personally train with that as well.
Okay.
And any of my triathletes, I'm like, let's get some Gatorade in there. You know, on the longer distance course, like a full Ironman, they'll have like flat Coke or flat Red Bull that they have out on the run. So I'm like, let's try to start, you know, incorporating that into your long workouts, excuse me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So same thing, you know, with my ultras, I'll say like, if they wanted to bring bacon, like that's fine, but sometimes that's kind of hard to train with. So I'm like, beef jerky has a pretty similar profile. Mm-hmm. So beef jerky, I know peanut butter packets or like almond butter packets are really big for ultras as well. So I'm like, let's get some of that, or a peanut butter and jelly, or, mm-hmm. you know, any of those. So yeah.
Yeah. They'll roll up peanut butter or Nutella in tortillas and cut it and slice them. Yeah. And so, yeah, those are the kinds of solid foods.
Yeah. 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 That's actually really funny. That's what I do on the bike too. So. It's easy. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And it's interesting because I think, you know, I would imagine you'd have to, each of your athletes is different. You said some of them can tolerate solid food and some of them can't. And, you know, I've had the experience of showing up to the race with food that I've had in my training. Mm-hmm. And when I got past 50 miles, I didn't want to eat any of it. And it was like, no, it didn't work for me. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, it's a learning experience, and some of it, I kind of have to improvise once you really get into the race, because.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, and just like with any training day, any day of your competition could be so different in what you can tolerate. You know, naturally you probably have a little bit of nerves going into it, so that already is causing some GI stuff. So you know, just keeping that in mind of maybe if you're training with caffeine, for example, caffeine, maybe if you're having a super nervous stomach, might not be the best to start with, but rather maybe have on later in the race when you've eased into the race and you're starting to feel good.
Yeah.
So
Yeah. And I've had other people that I run with and some people I've interviewed on the podcast that have had that issue. They've had everything, their training plan, their nutrition has worked well. Mm-hmm. The day of the race, it's just like none of it worked.
Yeah.
And besides, you know, some of it was nerves, but some of it was just their body on that day. Just was like, no, they weren't having it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other, you know, there's also those people who didn't, it was a new, it wasn't Tailwind. It was some other thing like Gatorade. Yeah. And he hadn't really trained with it on long runs. He'd had a few sips and it just, you know, and he put himself in a difficult situation because he couldn't, whatever this stuff was, it was in his bladder and was making him throw up, and he had no water. and he was, you know, 10 miles from the next aid station. And so it was, it was really a serious issue.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are kinds of things you don't want to do when you're, right. out there in a race.
Yeah.
So
what
about, the goo packs, those things that you, mm-hmm. you've recommended, or are people okay with that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I'm like, there's a science behind why they put into those little goos mm-hmm. what they do. And the biggest thing is the type of carbohydrates they offer. So you'll see the biggest one in the goo pats, any of the goos, is like maltodextrin. Sometimes you'll see glucose, sometimes you'll see fructose, sucrose is another one. And so all of these sugars break down in your body a little differently and have different transporters that take the sugars into your cells so you can use it for energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so the wider variety of carbohydrate that you offer your body, the better your body is able to absorb it. So, you know, if you're having solid food, it's going to offer a different type of carbohydrate. You're having an electrolyte drink that's offering a different type of carbohydrate. And then you're having some gels or blocks. Gels and blocks have pretty similar nutrition profiles. Those are offering different type of carbohydrates. So having those in like a rotation during your ultra races is very helpful in terms of transporting the nutrients to your cells that you can use for energy. And that will help decrease the amount of GI complications that go on.
Okay.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
And I've never heard that. I mean, because we tend to get, here's the thing I like, and so you just take that.
Yeah.
And that's a great that's a great thing to know.
Yeah.
So do you like read the labels? I mean, to see what the the breakdown is of the kinds of carbohydrates.
Yeah, exactly. So, on any of the new supplements and products that you use, just looking at the ingredients, and you'll see which sugars are available in that product. And
okay.
So you can kind of look to see, okay, which products am I using currently, mm-hmm. and do I need to add in a different type of sugar? And so that might be helpful. And then also, I mean, hydration, and okay. I think we all know this, hydration is huge, huge, huge on avoiding, the GI complications. Mm-hmm. 'Cause naturally water or fluid helps transport those nutrients to your cell. Mm-hmm. So if we're not hydrated, those nutrients are sitting in our gut. And that's, we want to avoid that.
Go over the carbohydrates again, the names of the carbohydrates. So so if somebody didn't, you know, they have a chance, want to write this down.
Yes.
Yeah.
So some of the big types of carbohydrates that are listed in our nutrition supplements today, maltodextrin, sucrose, fructose, and glucose. Those are the big ones. There may be other ones listed, but the wider variety of sugars or carbohydrate that you have available to intake during your competition or training, the better your cells absorb those nutrients, because they are each individually will be transported into your cells via different transporters to be taken up in your cells as energy, so they can be used. Yeah.
So does that also mean that some would go into this sooner than others? So that, because typically if you just take something sugary, you've got you've got sugar, and I mean like the Oreos that I ate, I got this burst of energy, and then 10 minutes later I just felt like I was walking in sand, because you know I had this crash. Well, it felt like just the letdown of, you know, had an instant injury, and then it was like it went away. So does having the variety of carbohydrates, does that make that actually so that you don't get that instant hit and then crash?
That's a great question. So so like maltodextrin, for example, breaks down slower into the body, and sucrose is made up of two sugar molecules called glucose and fructose. So that also breaks down a little bit slower in the body. Whereas if you have glucose or fructose, those are going immediately into that cell and allowing your body for that quick energy.
Okay.
So that's where you get the different breakdown.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And so fructose, if I remember, if I remember, that's the kind of sugars that are in fruit. Is that, yeah. Mm-hmm. So baby food that was made up of pureed fruit is mostly fructose.
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And this, and I know I talked a little bit about cycling the different types of sugar. And I know, and earlier you talked a little bit about, like, I brought all this food with me, but I didn't want to eat it. Same food, and so that often is what I call flavor exhaustion, to where our bodies get so used to that type of sugar, or are so used to whatever, say you got hooked on this one gel and you're only doing this gel. Mm-hmm. It allows your body also to have different flavors. So you're not burnt out by the end of these, you know, hours and hours of, racing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I know a lot of discussion. I mean, among ultra runners, there are some who say, well, you know, spring energy, it's real food. You shouldn't take these gels because they're all chemicals. And yeah. So you're saying that the sugar is sugar, the carbohydrates is carbohydrates, the gels will still work as long as you use them in kind of cycle through and just not taking the same thing over and over.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, in a perfect world, like would we love to focus on whole food during these ultra events? Absolutely. But it's also if your body can tolerate it, because when we look at things like dried fruit, fruit, like whole fruit, even whole foods in general, we're looking at a fiber component as well, and maybe some fat. And fiber and fat both slow down how fast food is absorbed into your bloodstream and into your cells that can be used for energy. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, can your body use fat and protein and fiber in those instances? Absolutely. But it's going to slow food, or it's going to slow down that digestion. So these quick sugars are really great for that quick energy that your body likely needs during these events. So that's definitely something to take into consideration.
So I know there's some runners that they say they're fat adapted. And so I've heard of people running ultras with just fat or primarily fat. Mm-hmm. For those of us who are not completely, is mixing in a little fat okay? I mean, and I'm thinking about the back of the pack, middle of the pack runners who are going to be out in 100 miles, they're going to be 30, 32 hours. Is that something to think about
for my ultra athletes, I always recommend fat and protein, because when you go that long, there's a point that your heart rate, and fat adapted, you know, loosely, right? Because over a certain heart rate zone, your body needs carbohydrate. It cannot use fat for fuel. And so what fat adapted means is your body is used to training at a certain zone. And in that zone, you're able to use fat for fuel. Mm-hmm. Whereas once you cross over, it's called the crossover point, to where your body switches from fat burning to carbohydrate burning. And that's when you have an elevated heart rate. Mm-hmm. So if you're going up a big hill, if you maybe in the heat as well, right, your heart rate's mm-hmm. elevated a little bit. So any of that, those moments that your heart rate is higher than that crossover point, your body will start to use carbohydrate. And that's just, that's anybody. Everybody's zones are very different, and naturally just the training process, you can increase that fat zone that you're mm-hmm. burning. So for any athlete that's doing anything, honestly, over 2.5 hours, you should really start looking at protein, as well as some fats. I wouldn't say, you know, push fats, all the high fats.
You know, because there are people who are on keto and they swear, you know, I don't need carbohydrates. And, mm-hmm. and, I have a friend who's diabetic, and so she really has done well with it, but she's not an athlete.
Oh yeah.
But I know there are athletes out there who are pushing that as well. And so,
yeah. Yeah. And I think I don't think there's enough research, especially there's research on male athletes, but not on female athletes. And so I'm very curious to see what comes of that. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I think there's, especially with our female athletes, we run into things like hormones and the chronic fatigue that's really affected in that realm of when we ditch carbohydrate. Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's interesting that more and more female athletes are, especially in the ultra marathon, they're stepping up and putting them into shame in some areas. I mean, the Biggs Backyard, Maggie Goodrell was the overall winner. So, and I think I just lost you. We're having a Zoom, I think it's beginning of the workday on the East Coast, and so Zoom is slowing down.
Yes.
Everyone's doing teleconferences.
Yes.
But yeah, so maybe someone will start doing some research into that of course, you know, there's been discussion about how is it that the further the distance, the more women are becoming or pulling even with being able to compete head to head with the elite men. I mean, the elite
right.
men are doing, mm-hmm. which I think is really cool.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. To see.
So that's interesting. So you were talking about the longer things over 2.5 hours, and that is like an ultra marathon runner is going up hills. You're going to be doing both fat and carbs.
Yeah. Yeah. So switching mostly to carbs, because that's your body's needing that quick energy, that quick turnover. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, there's that crossover point that your muscles, that immediate source of energy for your muscles is carbohydrate. Mm-hmm. And do we have carbohydrate stores in our body? Yes. Mm-hmm. Our muscles and liver together probably have about 2,000-ish calories of carbohydrate stored as glycogen in the muscle and liver. But your body has to go through a process to take that out of your muscle or your liver to use for energy. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, obviously you plateau at a point to where that 2,000 calories is not much when
it's not much when you look at your Garmin and on a run, and it's like, oh, okay. And for those who are trying to lose weight, they go, oh, you know, I burned 2,000 calories according to my Garmin, and how come it doesn't show up? They get that frustration. So I know a lot of people who, they think of running or working out, oftentimes if they're in the beginning, they're looking for weight loss. And so you said, you kind of talked about, you know, athletes said that if they're trying to change their body type, do it on the off season. Mm-hmm. So what would you say to a person who's like been on the couch? So they're out of shape. They got, you know, 20, 30 pounds they want to lose. Mm-hmm. And they think, well, I'll just go out and start running.
Exercise is absolutely a huge component of the weight management in the long run, right? That helps us, I mean, one, put more muscle mass on, which muscle mass is going to be more metabolically active than our fat mass. But in that instance, you know, going from couch to running, there is going to be a calorie deficit, right? You're naturally going to be burning more energy running than you were sitting on the couch.
Yes.
But, you know, the equation of calories in versus calories out is kind of, if we lived in this perfect world where there wasn't anything else affecting weight. And what I mean by that is we have so many factors affecting weight, whether that be your sleep hygiene and routine, your stress levels, things like hormones for my females. I see this all the time, is there's a big imbalance and that's affecting their weight, their diet and health history. So I see a lot of people that have been chronically dieting. And what I mean by that is so low, low, low calories. And then they're having high activity and they're like, I'm in this huge deficit. And I'm like, but this huge deficit is also creating a big inflammation factor in your body. And when our bodies are inflamed, we're not going to lose weight. And so in that instance, we start to do a reverse diet. And what that is I actually build them back up on their calories, which some people are like, that doesn't make sense. That sounds counterintuitive, right? And interestingly enough, we start building them back up in their calories. And what this does is it allows the body to feel safe in itself, right? We're no longer causing this inflammation and we're not creating a stress response in our bodies anymore. We're allowing the body to use the nutrition so that it's actually rebuilding that metabolism, building your calories back up, making you more metabolically active so you can put on muscle mass. And so you start to lose that fat mass. And so that's kind of as the role of a dietitian is, so many people think dietitians are just going to put me on a diet.
Right.
And
to lose weight. I mean, that's
right. Right. And to lose weight. Like they're like, oh, I don't want to see a dietitian. Like they're just going to tell me to lose weight. And mm-hmm. Anyone can talk to my clients and I actually don't even weigh my clients. Unless they're really numbers focused and data is something that mm-hmm. they love. But, I mean, 90% of the time I'm not focused on weight at all. I'm focused on how are you feeling? What's your performance look like? How was your sleep? Mm-hmm. What are you doing for stress management? How's your digestion? That's what a dietitian is. Okay. So yeah.
That's cool. So how do you help people with stress management? What is your.
Yeah. So that's a great question. And this, everyone's going to be so different in what mm-hmm. stress management or what works for them. But what we do here is really focus on, you know, are they doing anything for stress management and what their main stressors are? Mm-hmm. And then that's how we develop a plan of, you know, stress management. So whether that be they have a morning routine that really sets them up for success during the day, which I highly recommend for everybody, because really, I've seen this time and time again with my clients and myself included, is when you have that time in the morning, even if it's waking up 10 minutes earlier for just a peace of mind, you know, get your day set out right. Like, don't be rushed in the morning, all of those things, that can really help with stress management. Whether it be, you know, thinking of only, rather than having this laundry list of to-dos, thinking of three or four at the very most important tasks for the day mm-hmm. and having those be pinpointed of what you need to get done. And then, you know, what they're doing to wind down in the evening is the biggest thing. And so I think it's so important to have time to, whether that be time to yourself, whether that be that you incorporate this with your family, if you have kiddos, and allowing that time to be like, such as like a family dinner. That means electronics are off, phones are away, and you're sitting with your family, because all of that energy from electronics can create stress. You know, some of my moms, I really encourage them after they put the kids to bed. I'm like, take 5 or 10 minutes and literally just sit and breathe. Like, that's, you know, something as simple as that can really reduce stress. Journaling, so effective. So many people, and I will say journaling can be like a stream of thoughts, right? It doesn't have to be anything formal. You can do it anytime during the day. If you're having a high stress moment, maybe you just need to write a couple words down to get it out on paper, and and essentially what stress management is just moving that energy out. So you're not holding it in anymore. You're just literally getting rid of it. So those are some tools that I use.
And journaling, as you were talking about that, I was thinking about my wife. Mm-hmm. She struggled to write, you know, she was not a writer. Right. And so she found, she called it a bullet journal. So writing bullet points.
Yeah.
And so for, if someone's listening is like, oh, I can't journal. I was like, well, my wife she's very much like an engineer. She has this, you know, point A to point B, get just the facts. Yeah. So yeah, journaling doesn't have to be this, you know, it doesn't have to be a poem. It doesn't have to be, multiple paragraphs, just, yeah, the bullet journal that worked for her. So, yeah. So.
And if you are somebody that enjoys technology, there is really great apps on your phone for journaling that actually guide you through the process. So, or if you're new to journaling and you're just like, I don't really know where to start. There's either apps on your phone, and there's like journals on Amazon that will guide you through the process of like asking you questions of like, what are you feeling? Like, you know, it just guides you through the process. So those might be some helpful things to just get started.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know stress is a big deal. And do you run into people who feel like they can't take time for themselves?
Oh yeah. All the time.
Yeah. Especially for runners. I mean, that for runners who have, you know, family at home, oftentimes there's a lot of guilt associated with like, I feel like I need this time, but at the same time, I feel guilty because I'm taking time for myself.
And right. Yeah.
So, yeah. That is an issue for, and especially I think for women, I mean, cause there's a lot more pressure on women to, you know, be at home, take care of the house. And I mean, not fair, but that is something that, I see is important to take, like they say in the airplane, you know, put the mask on yourself before you help others.
And, right. I think, yep. And that's what I always say. I'm like, make sure your cup is full before you serve others. And so I actually was very guilty of that too. It's like, I really was serving others and kept giving. But sometimes like you have to be the one to receive or be the one to take care of yourself first. And that is, I mean, that's so true for all people. And I think parents, especially, right. We see, you know, parents just give, but at some point, like you need to receive or, you know, take care of yourself.
Yeah.
So even if it's 5 minutes a day, right? 5 minutes.
Yeah. So. That it's amazing how much difference that will make of just of setting aside that. And for most, I mean, it's people feel like I'm so busy, I'm so overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. But you spend more time than that on Facebook.
Yeah. Right. And that's what I was going to say. I was like, I'm about to give some tough love, but how much time, and this is a really great tool to use, is sit down and measure out your day and do a time log. Mm-hmm. How much time are you using or spending on Instagram, Facebook, watching TV, you know, doing those mindless activities that you could really take time for you, and for yourself. And that being journaling, meditation, breathing, things like that.
Yeah. And it's more of a, you know, it's again, what I say, it starts with your mindset. I mean, the mindset of, you know, I'm important enough that I need to make this time. And it's just of organizing priorities. Yeah. And I heard somebody talking about time budgeting. Mm-hmm. And it was a professor who was busy, and he would write, I mean, this was back before cell phones, and he had a notebook, and he would write notes as he walked between classes. Mm-hmm. And he ended up writing books in these little 5 minute intervals in between. You know, he'd have 5 minutes and he would just jot things down, and then had enough content to create a book just within these little 5 minute segments. So, cool. the idea is, like, I don't have time is it's a convenient excuse, right? But it's not true. We all have time. It's just choices we make on how to use it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And the same thing. I mean, what for me, the transformation came when I realized that it was up to me. It was, it wasn't all these external factors. It wasn't, you know, yes, I did have some limiting beliefs that were there, but, you know, it wasn't anybody else's fault. It was the choices that I was making.
Right.
And that the choices that I've made brought me to here, you know, mm-hmm. diet and, you know, the entire range of choices. You know, we have the choice of what we do. Mm-hmm. And, I just learning how, and I said, okay, I can make better choices. And so,
exactly.
That's cool. So how can people find you if they want to get in touch with you?
So I, Instagram, I'm at, dash of Dana RDN. That's probably the best place. I also have a Facebook group, if you're on Facebook, called Dana Nutrition Coaching. Happy to have you there. I on either place I post a lot of nutrition content. My Facebook group's a little bit more in depth of nutrition stuff.
And that's a group you join.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And I also have a website, adashofdana.us. So
Okay. Yeah. That's great. So who is your best, who's the clients that you, you know, who's your best client? Who would be an ideal client for you?
So my main clientele is female athletes. I do work with all athletes, but that's kind of the bulk of the clients that I've been working with. Anybody that has struggled with their relationship with food, I do a lot of mindful and intuitive eating. That's my clientele.
Okay. Great. So, and somebody who wanted to become an athlete, if they were, you know, the person has been on the couch and is going, you know, trying to do a couch to 5K.
Yes, absolutely. Where do I start? I take all of those. So athlete, I define athlete, and I guess I should say this first, is anybody that's active, right? Mm-hmm. We are all athletes. Whether we are recreational, you know, all the way up to elite, we're all athletes. We're all out there. So.
Yeah. And I know that there are a lot of runners in the runners groups who, people who have medals on their wall, mm-hmm. and say, when can I call myself an athlete? And so that, you know, that self-concept of you know, not being an athlete is, I mean,
yes,
don't disqualify yourself.
Yeah. You're an athlete if you're out there.
If you're out there.
You lace up your shoes.
Yeah. The minute you decide to get out the door and go do something for your body. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you a lot, Dana. I appreciate your time. The information has been very, very helpful. And I hope things go well for you for your triathlon. And
thank you.
In October, and then you're doing a full one next year, right?
Yes. Triathlon.
Which one are you going to do?
I have not decided yet. I need to pull the plug there and just sign up for one. Yeah.
Well, Hawaii might be open back up by that time. I know that.
Right. That would be cool.
they've been closed down for they've been more restricted than some of the other places. But
yeah. And good luck to you and your ultras. And
well, thank you. Yeah. And it's I wanted to have you on because my nutrition planning for my races has been kind of hit and miss. And so, so I was one that my stomach didn't bother me, but I wasn't getting enough food. And so, I ended up, and so I appreciate that. I appreciate all your help. And so, and I'll link your links in the notes of the show.
Perfect. Sounds good.
So if people want to find you, they can get a hold of you. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you a lot. Good talking with you.
And, yes,
and I will be following you on Instagram to see how your triathlon gets.
Cool. So,
thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and review. And don't forget to subscribe. That way you won't miss out on any new episodes. If you'd like to contact me, you can find me on Facebook as @UltramarathonMindset, or you can find me on the web at theultramarathonmindset.com. Remember, your mindset is the key to success in running and in life, and developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Hey, thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time.